A quick word from today's sponsors. For all you content creators, small business owners, and entrepreneurs, did you know that creating an income online or adding a new revenue stream to your business has never been easier? Have you ever considered taking your knowledge, skills, and expertise and converting it into a course that you can sell online? Well, introducing LearnWorlds. LearnWorlds makes it easy to create, host, and sell beautiful online courses that have an impact. With LearnWorlds' intuitive platform and a wealth of resources to educate yourself, you're only a few steps away from building a thriving online business in the booming knowledge economy. To find out more, visit www.trylearnworlds.com/free. That's www.trylearnworlds.com/free. Or follow the link in the episode description to start building your course today. As some of you listeners will know, I recently gave birth to a beautiful baby girl. My pregnancy was not as easy as I was hoping because I was extremely sick with hyperemesis, and I was told by so many people to just try ginger or eat little and often, it will really help. And even though I appreciated people trying to help, I'm still being given advice from every angle on how to be a mother to my child. And this is something I feel all parents experience at one time or another. But over at the Mother Trucking Truth podcast, JC and Mary are releasing important content that is helping mums embrace who they are by blowing up unrealistic expectations and laughing through the chaos of motherhood. They interview people from all walks of life, speaking through all things parenting, along with some insightful episodes where the ladies interview professionals in the field. All of season one is available for you to binge today. So head on over to this episode description to find a link to the Mother Trucking Truth podcast and feel great about parenting. Hello, listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of The Cult Fold. I am your speaker, Casey, and I'm officially back from my short maternity leave and I'm looking for new people to interview. If you have a story to tell and would like to chat, then please email me at cultfaultpodcast@gmail.com or find me on Twitter and Instagram at cultfaultpod. This also means the Patreon will begin having monthly exclusive content and ad-free episodes loaded onto it from August. Today we are looking at a new group called The Last Reformation, and here is my interview with Russell. Hello, Russell, and welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today and agreeing to share the story of your lost family member. Would you like to start by introducing yourself?
Hey, Casey. Great to be on the show. My name is Russell. I'm from Canada, Saskatchewan, Canada, a little bit more northern. There's a bunch of snow on the ground still, probably for a few weeks longer, about minus 10 degrees Celsius out. So pretty snowy out. And yeah, not much really to say. I go to work, I come home, got a few hobbies I do, podcasting, playing video games, go hunting on occasion, go shooting, and I guess another thing, I'm pretty good backgammon player too, so.
Backgammon, that's not something I play too much of. Hey, challenge me to checkers and I'll be there, but backgammon, I think I need to have a little bit of practice if you challenge me to backgammon. And chess, my partner's so good at chess, but that's just too over my head, chess. But brilliant. I think we're definitely going to touch on your podcasting towards the end of the episode. But for the time being, we're here today to talk about the Last Reformation. I don't know too much about this group. So what can you tell us about them specifically?
So the Last Reformation is a hidden cult in that it's not mainstream. It's not like Jonestown. It's not like Scientology. But it is definitely a threat. It's underground, but it's slowly beginning to be more above ground. They originally started in the Netherlands by someone named Torben. I can't pronounce the last name. It's way out of my league. But this gentleman started a group, and he proclaimed that he was a prophet and that regular Christianity is strayed away from the message, strayed away from the path. But this guy, of course, is going to bring everything back, right? He's going to bring everyone back onto the path, onto the straight and narrow. So started this group, and what they do is they're very, very involved online. You can go to their website. They're very good at social media presence, and they're very good at aggressive takedowns.
Okay.
So if someone says something bad about them, they engage in very aggressive takedowns of negative reviews, negative information. So for a while, it was very difficult to finding any information out about them whatsoever. This family member of mine, when they first told me about this group, I had to do a bunch of research, and there wasn't really anything out there past the official stuff. They had an article on Cult Watch, so I was reading through that to get a little bit more background information. And then there was a couple of Reddit threads that I was kind of going through, but again, they were pretty old, and it just was difficult to find any real substantial information. Mm-hmm. There was a few YouTube videos, people warning about it, but then those videos disappeared, and I think it was part of their takedown sort of, because if you go on Google and you Google Scientology, like the references to cults and that sort of stuff, it's right there. This group, that sort of stuff, you'd have to start go, and everyone knows on Google, you're not going past the first page of results.
No, that's the
way it works.
Yeah. And it's interesting that your family member approached you to tell you about this group, and you thought to kind of have the forethought to go and research. And if others who are approached by this group and proselytize to and think to do the same thing, and there's not readily accessible information online or through research that warns them about this group, then that's something that's quite troubling, isn't it, in itself?
Yeah. So they didn't initially approach me specifically to mention the group. I mean, we'll get into the complete story in a little bit. One of the key things is that Torben's group has been actually outcast from their country. They actually settled in, I believe it's California. I believe in the United States is where their headquarters is located now, because they were actually expelled from the country of origin, which I can't remember exactly which country it is right now, but they were expelled from there. They've now settled in the United States, where anything is a go, really. Freedom of speech is much different than many other countries in the United States. And they're building their headquarters, which they're calling the Ark. Very
right.
Similar, reminiscent to Noah's Ark, mm-hmm. right? The big flood's coming, so we're going to insulate ourselves from that. And if you go onto their website, they host these things called kickstarts. So they're kind of like the same sort of information meetings and sessions that Scientology does. And so what they do is they try to get family members to bring family and friends to these kickstarts. And they're very, very aggressive workshops where they rapidly and aggressively try to do the recruiting.
Yeah, I've just looked up the website here, and the website is thelastreformation.com, and the tagline is actually "Get Kickstarted Today." So I'm guessing that is their kind of where Heaven's Gate would say that they're going to be recycled.
Mm-hmm.
This group would say they're going to be kickstarted.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because the leader you mentioned, Torben, it says here Torben Sondergaard. So Torben Sondergaard has a book that he released in August 2013 called The Last Reformation. So this person is obviously extremely well-versed in the doctrine that they are presenting to their followers and their members.
Yeah, they also came out with a movie that this family member had me watch, and I watched it, and it's interesting when you know you're in front of people that aren't thinking rationally, and they want you to look at their propaganda,
mm-hmm.
and you're looking at it from the viewpoint, not of someone with genuine curiosity, but of someone that's looking at it like, how does someone end up indoctrinated? And I'm watching this piece of propaganda, and I have to give them credit. I have to give credit where credit's due. They are fantastic at producing propaganda. They
right.
understand how to produce movies. It's not like the old Christian movies like Veggie Tales or some Christian superhero movie where everyone's just rolling their eyes because it's terrible. We're talking They know what they're doing. They have very, very good production teams. They've gotten some kind of B-list musicians and celebrities, kind of even C-list, that they're redoing their baptisms. And that's something I'll talk about later on, but they don't recognize the Christian, Catholic, any type of Catholicism-based baptism as a legitimate baptism. So to be involved in their group, you have to be rebaptized.
Interesting. Okay. And we've mentioned a couple of times this family member of yours, and you reached out to me originally to tell me that you are concerned because you have a family member who's involved in the Last Reformation. That's how you came to hear the name of the group and kind of go off and do a bit of research. So what can you tell us about this family member? When did they become involved? Do you know how they became involved and how long they've been in the fold of the movement for?
So I don't have specific dates because it all has become jumbled together as time goes on.
Yeah.
But I'll give you a background. I'm not going to give too much information because I am concerned about this family member's safety. And even though they've distanced themselves from the rest of their family, I still don't want to give too much information they would figure out who it is and that family member would be in danger or maybe have to pay money or something like that to this group.
Yeah.
So this family member is university educated, rational thinker, logical thinking person. I've known them my whole life to be someone that doesn't get fooled by things. Mm-hmm. So this was really kind of shocking. Growing up, this person was involved in the Catholic Church, not very much, but later on in life, they had a few life events that occurred and they became very involved with the Catholic faith.
Okay.
And I thought that's okay. You know, if for people out there that believe in a higher power, that's good for them. You know, if that brings them comfort and peace, none of my business. You live your life, you do your thing. So I had moved out west and I came back to visit this family member. And I was like, oh, you know, are you still going to church? Because they talked about church quite a bit. Well, we're going to a new church now. And I said, oh, okay. So they asked me to come to this church. And I understood at this point that church had become very important to this family member. So I thought, okay, I'll go. I personally don't practice religion myself. I'm not opposed to people that do. That's their business. I just personally don't practice religion myself. So I went to one of kind of their gatherings, and it actually wasn't too bad. It was a more open style of church. They had like a Christian rock band. They have a whole bunch of working groups.
Right.
They raise a bunch of money for charities in the community. They do home restoration for people that have disasters in their homes. Like, I was actually kind of impressed. And I was like, okay, well, this is a community that obviously this person is very comfortable with and involved with. So good for them. I mean, it was interesting, you know, it was interesting because the pastor there didn't wear the typical collar. It was more relaxed.
Right.
And they were welcoming of people of all denominations that were feeling kind of lost, I guess.
Okay.
So I thought, okay, good for him or good for that person. And then I came back to visit again a year later and I said, how's everything going with your church? Oh, we're not with them anymore. Okay. Is what happened? Well, they don't take things seriously enough. We're with a new group now. Oh, yeah, these people know what's really going on. Okay. So that's when this family member started telling me about this new group. And they had been approached by someone from that church who was saying this place is full of sin. It's not actually taking the scripture seriously. It's not taking anything seriously here.
Right.
But we're part of a group that does.
Right.
And so this family member invited me to one of their Bible study sessions.
Yep.
But something had changed. Something had changed. Their man, the mannerisms of this family member, the way they talked, everything had an element of religion to it. And although I grew up in a very Christian, or not Christian, even though I grew up in a very conservative household,
yeah,
the household was still had liberal values and kind of it was a kind of a well mixed group of values where conservative when it came to money and politics and kind of economic.
Okay.
But I grew up in a family too that was very open and liberal towards LGBT and
and
social issues and that. So I guess fiscally conservative, more socially liberal.
Okay.
But I
sounds
noticed
like a good balance actually.
Yeah, it was a decent balance. But now, and again, this isn't a reflection on conservatives in the United States or conservatism in total. But we're talking this family members glued to Fox News daily and to all these other sort of more right-leaning news networks. And again, there's nothing wrong with that because I think that both sides are full of crap, but that's just another tangent I won't get off on.
Yeah.
But it kind of plays into some of the stuff later on. So they invited me to go with them to this Bible study group. So I was kind of reluctant at first, kind of hesitant. Then I said, oh, okay, I'll go. So we're driving there and we're meeting at someone's house, specifically someone's house. Now, this house is not like your middle class kind of suburby or lower class house. These people are wealthy. They have lots of money.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
It's very obvious based on the area of town that they lived in, the size of their property that they were also making quite a bit of money, which is surprising because you would think that having wealth in general, people that I guess cut that part out. It was weird because generally I found through my own research that people that get involved with cults tend to come from lower social economic backgrounds. They tend to be people that are looking for meaning that they don't have in their life. They're very lost. And they're susceptible to that type of indoctrination.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed up at this house, went inside, talked with these people. They seemed like really nice people. There's some other people there. Again, everyone that was there was, I would say, kind of middle to almost upper class economically wise.
Right.
So they all sat in the living room and went over there and they opened up their Bibles and they're talking about their Bible stuff and comparing scripture stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, this group's a little weird, but they don't seem harmful.
Right. And well, do you know what version of the Bible they were reading from?
They were reading from the New Testament.
Okay.
From what I remember. No, sorry. They were reading from the Old Testament. They were talking about the New Testament at one point, but their scripture reading was specifically, I was raised Catholic, so I know most of the scriptures about, I believe it was Job, who lost all of his kids and still loved God, even though God basically destroyed him.
Mm-hmm.
And as a weird sort of test, I guess. But then things got really weird. And this is where the alarm bells started going off. This is where I realized something was terribly wrong. I honestly thought I was in a movie. I thought, where's the production crew here? Like, this is a setup. There's no way.
This
is stuff you hear. This is stuff you see on television, like something you might see in like the movie Midsommar or something like that. Like just some.
Oh my goodness. Now you've mentioned that film.
Get ready. So one of their members of their group has cancer. So they phoned this member up and they were talking to her. And I mean, she had low affect, low mood, until she wasn't very happy about her situation. So they all said some prayers. I'm like, okay, they're doing their prayer thing. you know, if that works for them, hey, good for them. Then things got weird. So they told her that they were going to attack the cancer in her body via prayer. Right.
Okay.
So that's when my eyes first kind of went a little wide, and I was like, okay, this everything just got a little bit more interesting for sure. So they all extended their arms out towards the phone, like palms open. I don't know, maybe they're sending magical energy through their hands into the phone.
Right, yeah.
To the tower, and then to this person's phone, and out this person's phone towards the cancer, I guess. I'm not sure. The pastor that was reading jumps up and starts screaming into the phone, "Cancer, you leave this woman's body now, you foul demon. Demon from hell, I cast you out." And I'm like, holy fuck. Really? Like, I'm really looking around, like, everyone is eyes closed intently, and he's yelling at this phone.
Right, and you're just kind of standing there, like, looking around, kind of like the only one that thinks that something's a bit strange.
Yes, like, this was just normal, and I'm thinking, like, okay, like, I've studied history, I've seen, this is sort of stuff you would have saw 400 years ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. Or maybe in some extremist sort of group, I guess. I don't know. Like, something you'd see in the Southern United States, you know, thinking kind of like True Detective. I don't know if you saw that series.
Yeah. It sounds similar to anyone that's listened will know that I'm about to say this as well. But it sounds quite similar to Pentecostalism when they're casting out demons from people as well. But never over a phone. That's not something I've heard before.
So I'm looking at this. I thought, okay, this is some weird stuff going on. I kid you not, the woman next to me starts yelling in tongues.
Right.
Starts, like, screaming, just non-sensual. So now I realize something's really wrong. So I'm looking at this family member, and they're not saying anything. They're just, you know, hand out, right, eyes closed. And I'm kind of looking, and I'm thinking, how did you get to this point here? Mm-hmm. Like, what has gone on through your mind? What sort of cognitive dissonance have you had to engage in to think that you essentially at this point are performing some form of modern day magic?
Yep.
Like, you're taking Lord of the Rings and you're taking stuff like that, like superhero comics and that, and you think that you're actually doing this in real life right now. You actually think that you, to do something like this and believe it, you have to actually think that there's some magical force out there that no one can see that is going to, if you pray hard enough and have faith, is going to somehow impact reality around you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is it's a very strange sensation for me to even think that something like that is possible. So they're yelling into the phone. Everyone's yelling in tongues. Things are getting really, really weird here. I'm freaked the hell out. And so eventually they stop, and the woman's like, oh, I can feel the area, it's getting warmer. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you got some placebo effect really going on there.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think it enough, you probably think something's actually happening. You know, the power of the mind's amazing. Then they started recommending that they started telling her that modern doctors don't always have all the answers, and that she should be looking for, like alternate medicine and stuff like that. And I'm just thinking in my head, like, just trust your doctor. Don't. Cause at
yeah,
one point
absolutely.
I think they recommended at one point that she get vitamin C shots or something like that.
Right.
And I was just thinking, no, if your doctor isn't recommending it, it's probably not that doctors are infallible themselves, because doctor malpractice costs lives of hundreds of thousands of patients every year. But I would trust a doctor over someone that's willing to believe that they are channeling energy through a cell phone to attack cancer in your body.
Yep.
So afterwards, they could obviously tell I was freaked out. Like, I was visibly uncomfortable.
Yes.
And actually, to be honest, it takes a lot to make me uncomfortable. It really does. I've seen some pretty messed up stuff. So I was really uncomfortable. And they started explaining that that their church is going back to the original teachings and that people spoke in tongues back then. And again, now they're justifying, right? Now the justifications are coming through.
Yep, yep, yep. Because they can see that it's not something that's kind of not, it's not going down well with you. So they have to,
No, I'm looking at the exits and I'm kind of thinking like I'm charting my path if they try to grab me and sacrifice me or something like that. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It sounds hyperbolic to say, and I know it sounds kind of silly to say, but I was honestly freaked out because I had no idea where they were going to go from here.
Yeah.
Where could you possibly go from here? Next is going to be human sacrifice or some weird stuff.
Or accusing you of having some kind of demon.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? You know, or maybe they're going to do some Eyes Wide Shut weird sort of stuff in that. And I don't want to be any part of that. So they told me a little bit more about their faith. They told me that in their faith, they're going back to the original teachings and that every person in their faith is a disciple. So every person in their faith can make water holy, can do a baptism, can cast out demons. Every person can do that because when you're in there, you're a disciple.
So
now, there's different,
is there
there's
any
different
kind of
levels.
Official training that goes alongside that? Or do you just join and then get told to go off and save people, heal people?
There is a training kind of regime that they put people through. So the first thing they have to do is they have to redo your baptism.
Right.
Or they have to do one. They have to do your first one. So I was asked if I was baptized and I said, yes. And then they said, okay, well, we can redo your baptism. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good. I'm like,
okay.
Yeah, I don't need anyone to redo anything here. I'm quite fine.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, you know, if you want, because anyone here can make, including your family member, can make the water holy and then we can redo it. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good. I honestly thought that they were going to fill up a pool in the backyard and do this. Like, this is the type of stuff they're willing to do. Like, it's weird.
Right. Yep.
So I said, no, I'm good. Not my thing. And now I'm kind of finding reasons to get the hell out of there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm done. I'm just, no, these people are mentally ill. These people are I can't believe that I actually had to witness something like that. And it wasn't part of a movie or part of some sort of, I thought maybe it was a Ontario version of Just for Laughs, which is a Quebec based show.
Quick word from our sponsors. Over at the Indie Drop-In Network, there is something special for listeners who enjoy true crime, the paranormal, and conspiracies, and that's called Scary Time. The Scary Time podcast releases a new episode each week from a different content creator, meaning you get new stories, new hosts, new themes, and diverse content all the time. One particular episode by the Fireside Phantoms is called Strange Weather and Vengeful Witches, and goes into the lore and legend of weather witches, exploring eerie phenomena linked to potential occult activity. Listen to Scary Time on Apple Podcasts today, or follow the link in the show description to find out more.
And so we ended up leaving. And I didn't really talk about it all that much. I was very nervous around that family member now. And I found when I was talking to that family member, I was actually talking to them almost like I was observing them, like almost like they were a specimen.
Right.
Because I couldn't believe that they actually got themselves mixed up in all this stuff. Now, I could tell, my family member could tell that I wasn't impressed. So over time, we've really, really distanced from each other, incredibly so. I don't really talk to them at all anymore.
Right.
They've distanced from all their family. things started to go downhill for them. I asked the one question I did ask, and I said to them, I said, listen, I need to know this. I'm not judging, but I need to know, are they charging you a tithe, which is an old term for religious tax?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, there's no tithe or anything. Well, about a year later, they sold their house, their dream house, and they moved into a small house. And then they said, oh, we just didn't need a house that big. I don't think that's the case. I think that they sold the house so they could give that religion some of their money.
Right. Okay.
I have no proof of that, but going from your dream home that you claim you loved and everything was great, and you just built a new deck in the back, and suddenly you're moving into a small house, like a wartimey type of house.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, we don't need all the space anymore. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I believe that or not.
Anymore. Yeah. The only thing that's changed is you've joined this group. Nothing else that's significant has changed. You know, it's not like they've got three kids that have grown up and moved out in the space of, you know, that amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing that became apparent. So I was talking to another family member and I was saying, hey, I haven't heard from this person in a while. And they're like, oh, well, they've kind of gone in a bad way. Oh, what's going on? Well, apparently they were going to Walmart, this group, and they were preaching the gospel at Walmart, I guess, trying to convert people in the parking lot.
Right.
They had brought a pickup truck with a flatbed in the back, or not flatbed, a raised bed in the back that they had filled with water, and they were willing to do on the spot baptisms of people in the back of like a Ford pickup truck.
Right. Okay.
Is that like one of the most redneck things you've ever heard in your whole life?
Very bizarre. Someone approached me outside the supermarket and said, would you like to come to my vehicle here in the car park and be baptized? I would not know how to react to that at all. That would be a very bizarre sequence of words for me to hear from somebody's mouth. Yeah.
And it finally culminated with them being banned from Walmart. And you know, people of Walmart, right? Like that is, there's some interesting characters that congregate almost daily at Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this family member actually got banned from Walmart because they were trying to do on the spot exorcisms of people.
So not just baptisms, but exorcisms as well.
Well, exorcisms when you're a disciple, you can cast out demons, right? So it just all makes sense. Makes perfect sense.
So strange. So that they're going around asking if people want baptisms, but they're also approaching people asking or telling them that they require an exorcism or a demon cast out of them. And that's a service they can offer right there and then.
Yeah.
Whilst they've got sort of one bag of shopping milk and bread in one hand and eggs and fruit in the other.
Yeah. Just, hey, you know what? Get your Walmart shopping done. And while you're at it, get your exorcism done. You might as well.
That is very bizarre. That I've never heard of that before. I've heard of proselytizing in places like, you know, car parks and college campuses and things like that, but never exorcisms or baptisms in the same sort of conversation.
Yeah, it is they're again, they're a weird group. And if you look at the videos, and now it seems that the sort of dam is broken on that. You can find information online now about the true nature of their operations, and there is testimonies, people saying that they've had to rescue family members from this group. Some of the stories that you would kind of hear with like Scientology about people going missing in these groups and they're never heard from again. Because again, this group, again, medicine, modern medicine, who needs medicine when you have prayer, right? When you have faith.
Yeah.
God heals everything.
So You mentioned kind of having distance now from this family member. Is there anyone in your family who's tried to keep these lines of communication open and attempt to kind of keep regular contact with this family member?
Yeah, I have a few family members that stay in regular contact with them, but they're, again, direct family members where it would be almost a social expectation.
Right.
That they would stay in contact. But even them, when they're together, they will not talk about religion. They've set like a boundary with them where religion is not a topic that can be discussed because right. It's just not going to be discussed in good faith or appropriately.
No, it's kind of going to be, I don't know. It's strange, isn't it? It's very similar to the big kind of QAnon phenomenon that's happening at the moment where
They're 100% wrapped up in QAnon.
They are. It's interesting in some of the forums where people are like, I cannot have any contact with this friend or family member because every single thing I say, no matter how unrelated it is, always goes back to the political and conspiracy views that friend or family member has and kind of Donald Trump and QAnon and how we're going to change the world and save the world or shaming that friend or family member for not having the same political views or beliefs in certain conspiracy theories as the QAnon followers. And it's just exhausting for these family members. But you think it's similar. They mentioned QAnon themselves, this group.
Well, they bring up that, yeah, QAnon, Donald Trump, evil world power conspiracy sort of stuff. It's all kind of tied in. Again, I grew up in a more conservative household, but that doesn't mean that I can't engage my brain to realize when someone's making a fantastical claim, they better have fantastical evidence to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they've kind of gone in with this whole QAnon thing. It's just this group generally, I guess they're more right leaning. I wouldn't say that they're definitely not. They're not white supremacists. That's for sure. Because they appear to have a large base of people from different ethnicities. I don't think that they're a white supremacist group, which a lot of the QAnon people seem to be grounded in.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definitely a connection to some conspiracy related stuff. Again, I don't know that much of the internal workings altogether. I've done a little bit of research on my own, enough that I know that I'm educated, but it's not a rabbit hole I really want to go down too far. I don't want to investigate these people too much, but I do want to warn people. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come on to your show, is to warn people that they are like a sleeper cell. They're not your typical cult where someone's going to sell all their possessions tomorrow and go move to a farmstead and return to the earth and wait for the alien spaceship to come pick them up. You know, they're not going to have their members drink Kool-Aid en masse or anything like that. It's a lot more underground in that they base themselves enough in regular religion.
Mm-hmm.
That it can be almost hard at first to distinguish them from what would just be more of an evangelical branch of Christianity.
Yeah, like a fringe sect of Christianity almost. You know, because snake handling is something that's not particularly common, but it is a fringe part of Christianity that is practiced in some parts of the world. So, you know, if I was going to go to my first church service and they were doing snake handling, I would think, well, that's really strange. But for other people who have grown up with that, it's not strange. It's normal. It's part of their practice. But then when you pair that with the casting of demons and speaking in tongues, and the high control methods being used, that's when it starts to encroach on dangerous territory where exploitation is taking place. And if the headquarters of this group is over in America, and with everything that's happening over there at the moment with the gun violence and things like that, in a Walmart car park or parking lot, if that's a common practice across the last Reformation to proselytize in car parks and offer these services to people, what's to stop people like your family members or other people who are involved, what's to stop them from being attacked because they are approaching people and saying, let me perform an exorcism on you. You need an exorcism. And then someone's like, well, I'm going to defend myself right here because I feel threatened by you. And I'm going to attack you in this car park. You know, there's nothing to stop people I don't know. That's just another thought, isn't it? Like, these people are putting themselves at risk by going out into these car parks and accusing people of needing exorcisms or demons cast out of them.
I think the good thing is that there's a border on the southern part of Canada that keeps us from the United States. But yeah, definitely, even in a country like Canada, I know we have a nice person reputation, but believe me, we're anything but nice. We have crime that's just as bad and sometimes even worse than the United States in some aspects. So it is a concern, and people, especially these days, people are on edge with all the lockdowns and everyone, you know, just wanting this whole pandemic to be over. People's patient levels and fuses are about this big, just minuscule.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be approached by a stranger in a car park who has a bottle of water that could be opened, might have been opened, could have been drank from that person. And they're trying to come towards you with this bottle of water and get in your personal space. You know, there's so many things to consider on top of the pandemic that weren't things to potentially be considered prior to the whole virus making an appearance. But it is worrying, because I know that if somebody came up to me and got in my personal space in a car park, I'd feel threatened. And I don't think I'd act violently unless I felt like I needed to defend myself if someone put their hands on me or something, you know, like somebody I didn't know. But there could be people that just react instantly to that kind of being approached by somebody they don't know. And I don't know. It's just that's just another worry, isn't it? Not just the doctrine and scripture and belief system that these people are trying to enforce on others, but also the way that those other people could react to that. So that I think they're certainly putting themselves at risk by going out. And it's kind of like when I watched the Louis Theroux documentary on the Westboro Baptist Church, and they were taking their kids out with them and marching down the streets and sending out their messages and stuff. And I just kept thinking, they are putting those children into so much danger by spreading these messages of hate. And, you know, people would drive past in their cars and throw things at them. And I was thinking, those poor children, they're just so vulnerable and they don't know any different, and they're being brought up with the same messages of hate. So it's it's definitely something to consider how vulnerable these people can be putting themselves at risk by going into these car parks and trying to baptize people.
Yeah. Well, just on Westboro. So I did a project on Westboro when I was in college, our sociology class. I was fascinated by the Westboro Baptist Church, because it just, again, is the suspension of logic, the suspension of, but then the more I looked into the church and I read about it and I really kind of looked at testimonials and I watched lots of YouTube videos of their rallies and that, I just realized they're a First Amendment extremist group that's looking for someone to do something, and they're suing the pants off them. The owner of the church is a lawyer. I believe his wife was a lawyer too. The kids have almost all come out, and from what I understand, they are not involved with the church anymore, and they speak out against it. But from what I understand, they're less of a church and more of a First Amendment extremist group.
Yep. And I think the way that the information is controlled and the messages that they are sending to people, they could definitely be classed as a highly controlling movement or group. So I was thinking about covering them for Pride Month to raise awareness because of you know, them attending the funerals of people that pass away who are part of the LGBT community and spreading their message of hate. So, but I mean, are there there was something I wanted to discuss, and that was the weird incident that happened. You appeared on another podcast where you discussed this situation. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards you mentioned receiving some weird biblical messages.
Yeah. So I was on Paranormal Activities. So I actually did two episodes with Ben from there. So shout out to Ben and his podcast, really great podcast. First one, I talked about some potentially weird experiences I had while I was working in a federal prison. And the second episode, we actually talked about this group. I messaged him and said, hey, look, I got this story. I haven't really ever told anyone before, but I think it would make a really good story just on the weirdness of it all. So we talked about the last Reformation. And after the episode aired, he started getting these messages. Well, back up. First, after the episode aired, I had a few people reach out to me on Twitter and a few people reach out to him on Twitter and say, we've been covering this as well, and sent some YouTube video links. And I was watching a few of them, and some other people had weird experiences with this group too. But then right. The messages started showing up. So Ben started getting these DMs and these emails from people, and they were sending them like scripture quotes. And then some of them were sending Reddit threads that were like, very archived and old, where people were saying, I got to escape from this group, I got to get out. And then he started getting Facebook messages like, and stuff. And then they were sending like warnings to him. And some of them were sending like, you'll be judged. And then the accounts were getting deleted.
Right. Okay.
Kind of like on Twitter where they drop a nasty comment and then they block you, so they get the last word before they go away.
So yeah, and none of this had happened before these episodes aired?
No, it was very weird.
Interesting. Yeah. So it's too much of a coincidence for it not to be linked by the sounds of it.
Well, 100%. I think I sent you a copy of some of the messages. I believe so, didn't I?
No, you mentioned them in the emails, but I haven't seen any examples, I don't think.
I think it was another podcast that asked to see like screenshots of the messages and kept. And
oh no, yeah. Here they are. They're right at the bottom. Yeah, weird. I have actually looked at these. Because they're all in capital letters. And I was thinking that's threatening on its own, just like receiving like weird biblical messages all in caps. I'll just read a couple of them out. From the beginning of all and wisdom of all, before and after all, world matrixes are created. If ye want to know all before all and after all, just do within that ye want to know all before all and all after all. As all is all and all is one, and all that has that have been is are.
It sounds like you just read out a spell. I'm ready for some demon thing to pop up and serve me some liquor or something.
Will be, shall be, and are from and in the beginning source of all that exists, has been, is, are, shall be, will be before and after all, above and below, after all, before all. If any listeners can make sense of anything I've just said, there's no punctuation, so I can't even make the messages flow in the way they're probably supposed to be read. So if any listeners can make any sense of what I've just read out or know what they reference or anything like that, parts of scripture or anything, please get in touch and let me know. Because I would be really interested to kind of put some sense to those messages.
Yeah, I think it's kind of it's to me, it sounds like a message of judgment, like you're going to be judged, as is, as above, is below. Kind of, again, I'm really rusty on I haven't attended Sunday school in quite a long time. I'm pretty rusty in all my prophetism, but.
Yes, that's not I mean, I think I would worry if I started receiving messages like that. But we'll see. Maybe it's my turn after these episodes go live. If it is, I'll certainly let you know. But is there anything else you can think of that is worrying when it comes to this particular movement or your family member? Because we've talked about the kind of healing through the phone and the speaking in tongues, which is not something I've become quite accustomed to movements that have those elements, but the car park and the exorcisms and baptisms is not something I've heard before.
A message from today's sponsor, a podcast similar to mine. It's called The Catacomb Club, and it's a deep dive podcast hosted by Sam and Annie, two 20-somethings that are interested in sociology, politics, and spirituality. Join them every other Tuesday as they unpack a new topic for every show. I suggest starting at episode 1. It's labelled Stan Cults, where they take a look at how pop culture icons like Justin Bieber and the Beliebers or K-pop stars and their stans create cults of their own, and what that means for the rest of us. Find The Catacomb Club on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you find your podcasts, or follow the link in the episode description.
Is there anything else that you've heard or come across that you think makes this group particularly a danger to society?
The stuff that I've read from detractors mm-hmm. online and people that have been involved in this group, I worry about the safety of my family member. Mm-hmm. I still love them a lot. I care about them. But I can't be a part of that part of their life. And mm-hmm. because that part of their life is taken over so much of their life, I can't in good conscience really engage with them all that much, because I want to still have a relationship with them, but I also need to ensure my safety and just be careful, because I think that there is I think there's the possibility with this group that if people are not buying the message consistently, that there could be violence.
Right.
I don't know for sure. I don't want to say for sure because I don't know of any cases personally. And mm-hmm. I've just seen, again, some Reddit threads where people are saying that they had family members, you know, they joined this group, they went off their medication because of it, which is very common with cults, and they ended up killing themselves. And oh, that's goodness. The tragedy, right? Someone that already hates that they're imprisoned by medication for stability finds a group that promises you don't have to take your medication.
Yep.
God's going to solve it all. So they stop taking their meds. They go off the deep end and they end up harming themselves or other people, which I don't think is uncommon for cults for that sort of stuff to happen.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're like Scientology where people go missing but they have so many aspects that are so related to Scientology. The kickstart is such, it's so reminiscent of Scientology where they bring you in for the initial testing on their machine and they tell you, oh my goodness, you got the body thetans, you got to get rid of them. And that's okay. Yeah. You can exchange all your money and we'll get rid of all your problems for you.
Yeah.
And then people get so in debt, they end up being enslaved on their cruise ship or whatever that they have. And then they go missing. I don't know. Again, this group, they're known, but they're still underground, but they have followers in the hundreds, if not thousands of followers. So they aren't just a small little Jonestown commune of 60 hippies that are being sexually exploited by a leader. They are organized. They're across many different countries, Canada, United States. I'm not sure about the UK. I know kind of in the Netherlands, that's where they originated from.
Yeah.
They have movements there, but in their videos, they have hundreds of people. They have large gatherings of people, which I know that's like a taboo word all in itself these days. But yeah, I don't know if there's been any direct violence associated with that group, but I think indirectly, probably.
Okay. So one last question I have for you before we talk a little bit about your podcast is to ask you what advice you have for others who may have a family member who is lost to one of these groups and is potentially unreachable or has changed, their personality has changed, and they're so kind of engrossed in this group that it's become their entire life.
I would give the same advice that I would give for someone whose family member is involved in a gang, for someone whose family member is involved in any type of large group activity. I mean, I've spoken out against QAnon, but I've spoken out against Antifa as well. I think mm-hmm. they're highly politicized, almost religious movements in their own, with their own customs, their own symbology. I mean, for QAnon, it's all symbology around Illuminati, the all-seeing eye, stuff like that.
Yeah.
For Antifa, it's all the raised fist, the hammer and sickle, those sort of things. So both sides, again, ideological in nature. Same advice I give to anyone that follows those types of groups. You need to ask questions. You need to ask them as many questions as possible. And you need to ask the serious questions. How long have you been in this group for? What benefits do you get from this group? Are you worried at all about anything about this group? And you have to ask those difficult questions. You have to have those difficult conversations, and you have to just tell them, I think you're getting involved in something that has potential to hurt you or other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to offer them alternatives. You know, you're going to this group because you're saying you can't find meaning in life. Have you talked to a therapist about that? You're going to this group because you've had this trauma.
Yep.
Is this group really that beneficial for dealing with this trauma, or are they just exploiting you for this? And they might react aggressively. They might react with hostility, but you have to ask those questions. I asked those questions to this family member. They did not like those questions. And the fact is they couldn't answer most of the questions.
Right.
But at some point in time, you can help someone, you can reach out, you can be there. At some point in time, if they're not willing to engage, if they're that engrossed in it, then you have to disengage. You have to if it gets to the point where it's become a safety issue, if it's gotten to the point where it's obvious this person is not going to change, they're unwilling to change, and they are not approaching their relationship with you in an honest way because of it, then you may need to disengage. I disengaged.
Right.
I got to the point where I just couldn't deal with it anymore. I couldn't deal with the constant religious references. I couldn't, like, I made it very aware to this family member that religion is not my cup of tea. It really isn't. And that I'm not judging, but I don't want to hear about it all the time. I really don't.
So,
and they didn't respect that boundary, so I had to disengage.
Okay. And I suppose that's the natural course for somebody to take. But if that family member was to reach out to you today, would you be open to reopening those lines of communication and support for that person?
100%. But they mm-hmm. they would at this point have to reach out and say, look, I'm in over my head. So my first question would be, are you safe?
Yeah.
If they say that they're safe, it wouldn't be simply me asking, are you safe? What measures have you taken to ensure your safety? Those open-ended questions are going to get you that additional information that's really going to give you the answer. But like a narcissist, you have to be careful that it's also not part of a ploy to get you back into the fold so that they can keep playing the game with you.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
It's a lot of narcissistic people, when they have no one to play the game with, when everyone's gotten wise to it, they claim they've changed. And then people think, well, there's the glimmer of hope. They reopen the lines of communication, and it just ends up engaging in that pattern that narcissist needs to be able to achieve happiness in their life. And because you have to realize at this point in time, they're not thinking clearly. They're not thinking with the same rationality that you and I are thinking right now. They may think, and it could even, I'm not saying it is, but you just have to be careful. Delusional thinking is so dangerous. Oh, maybe they think that I'm possessed and now they need to trick the demon. So they're going to act like they don't care about that anymore. But really they're looking for I'm just saying, I know it's crazy, but you're not dealing with people that are thinking properly. So if tomorrow's family member reached out and said, look, this was all just a really bad thing. I was in a bad headspace. I need to get away from these people. I would, of course, would engage with them, but I would also be asking a lot of questions. And I would be gauging their willingness to answer those questions openly and honestly with me. And based on that, I might have to tell them, look, I think you're in the contemplation stage, you know, talk about stages of change. You're in the contemplation stage right now. When you're ready to go into the action stage of change, which is actively getting away from this group, then we can talk again. But until then, you need to keep working on your plan. And I think you do need, for something like that, you need to put a plan together to get away from a group like that.
Well, when I spoke to Dr. Janja Lalic, the cult professional, she's worked in the field for years and years and years, and she's released many books. And when I asked her the same question, she basically just said the most important thing is to keep those lines of communication open and allow that person to know that you are there for them, even if they are not interested in receiving that help or support or advice, if they don't want to hear it. But, you know, if they had a seed of doubt or some like series of events caused them to second guess what was happening with them in their life, you know, that it's so important that they understand that they have a support network that is ready to pick them up and help them on their journey out of the group. So I think it's great what you've just said there in terms of you would want to know answers to questions. You would want to make sure that they were being sincere and that they were being candid with the answers that they were giving you. But at the same time, you would be willing to have those conversations and offer that support to that family member. And I think that's the most important thing, is ensuring that they know that you haven't just kind of burnt bridges with them completely and said, well, I don't agree, I don't think you're well, or I don't think you're sane, and I don't want to speak to you ever again, so we're going to go no contact. It's good that you've said, like, I don't agree with your messages, and we can't have a conversation without you trying to enforce your beliefs and ideologies onto me. So we'll leave our conversation here until you're ready to pick it up again. And if we can have that conversation that doesn't include you trying to enforce those beliefs on me, then I'd be happy to continue that line of communication. So I think, you've got the right mentality there in terms of still saying that you'd happily support that family member despite the strange changes that they've gone through. But moving on to my next point, you are the host of a podcast called Coffee Breath Conversations. So let's talk a little bit about that platform before we finish today.
Well, I appreciate the chance to kind of talk about my podcast. I really haven't had any listeners from overseas at all. So basically, I'm about 27 episodes in. I started the podcast after my mother died, and I realized that I wanted to try something different. You know, it kind of put a lot of things in perspective. You only get one life. I always like talking with people. Yeah. I like having conversations like the one we're having right now, where there's a good exchange of ideas. So I thought I'd start a podcast, and I was thinking about a name. What type of name would I have for my podcast? Then I remember I had when we were taking training with the military, there was a major who came in to do a lesson with us on basically enforcing discipline, and but giving the reasons behind it, and dealing with unit conflict and things like that, things that can really tear a unit apart is the conflict and the internal conflict. It's not the enemy, because we're all there for the same mission. It's the internal conflict, because everyone has a different approach. Everyone's a different person, different place in their life. So he called them. He said, you have to have the difficult conversations, and that you have to get so close to the person that you're having an issue with, and that you can smell the coffee on their breath, and you have to ask them, is there an issue we need to discuss? And you need to get everything out on the table. So I was kind of thinking about that, because I wanted the podcast to be interviewing people, but I also wanted to have challenging conversations with people as well. So I thought, well, coffee breath conversations, right? Now, of course, everything's at a distance because of the pandemic and that, but it's been good. It's been really good so far. I've interviewed some interesting people, no celebrities. I'm not famous or anything like that, but I've interviewed lots of people from the local area. I've interviewed power lifters. I interviewed someone who was doing a walk from Mexico all the way back up to Canada. And just realizing too, that everyday people, everyone wants to get celebrities on their podcasts. Everyone wants to thinks they're going to be, not everyone, but there's a large amount of people that think they're going to be the next Joe Rogan and that sort of thing. But everyday people have unique experiences and have unique stories that quite often get overlooked because they're not part of the upper crust of celebrities and politicians and that sort of thing. And it's been difficult. I'm sure you probably know it's been difficult since the pandemic. Every single celebrity out there has decided to start their own podcast now.
Yeah.
And so it's really saturated the market, unfortunately. I think, was it Meghan and Harry that were starting their own podcast too?
Oh, probably. Yeah. I don't know.
You're not a royalist?
I don't know. I know Kim Kardashian started one because she'd done a lot of work on people who were on death row, I think, trying to get them appeals and things if she felt that it was unjust for them to be on death row. And so she started a podcast, which in one respect is amazing, because these celebrities can bring listeners to high profile cases and events that happen in the world that those listeners would not usually, you know, there's probably a whole demographic of Kim Kardashian fans that would listen to her if she did a podcast on cults that would never come and listen to my podcast. Mm-hmm. And these stories are so important. So where they can bring those new listeners in and bring awareness to these subjects and unsolved murders and unsolved mysteries and Jane Doe's and John Doe's and all those things, that's amazing. But you are right when you say that it has saturated the market, and you know, they start off with a huge base of listeners, and I try to remain partly anonymous with the work that I do, in terms of, you know, not revealing my last name and or too many personal details about my life and where I live specifically and my background. But then that puts me on the back foot as well, because I'm not starting with an Instagram of 3 million, 16 million fans and followers. I don't even know the likes of Kim Kardashian, how many followers she would have. So it is difficult. It's difficult starting a podcast. But like you said, everyday people, they have the most fascinating stories and experiences to share with people. And when I first read Coffee Breath Conversations, it's interesting the story that you have behind that, because I didn't think of that. I thought about being in a coffee shop with somebody where you sit and you drink a coffee and you talk about anything and everything. It's usually somebody you haven't seen for a while, because you're like, oh, let's quickly grab a coffee and have a catch up. And I can't even remember what it feels like to do that since we've been in this lockdown for over a year now. But that's the feel that I got from Coffee Breath Conversations when I first read that.
Well, I think that's great too, you know, because I definitely agree with that's a good interpretation of it as well. My latest episode, I had Chris Ball, who is a Canadian movie producer. out of Calgary. He was on, he talked about how he actually dropped out of high school and is now producing movies. He never went to film school. He found a job with someone on set. He got rolling with the job and he just made it happen, and he's made a living. And it goes to show that you don't have to go and sink yourself $60,000 in debt for a degree that's a piece of paper that doesn't at the end of the day translate into guaranteed work or guaranteed income.
Yeah.
Now my podcast is a little bit political, I will say, but not overtly political. And the reason why is I've been doing a series recently where I've been interviewing people specifically in regards to the pandemic.
Okay.
And trying to get different perspectives on it. And one of the things that I've kind of talked to people about is our politicians' utter failure to enact appropriate measures at appropriate times, and their absolute hypocrisy, and how that's helped fuel a lot of the conspiracy related to the pandemic itself. In Canada, we enacted a very strict lockdowns for a while, and then we found out that a vast majority of our politicians, even though we were told don't go on vacation, don't leave your homes unless you absolutely need to.
Oh no, I know what you're going to say. We've had the same thing over here.
And they were all going on hot vacations. Oh. The one went on vacation over the winter time, and they couldn't get a hold of him to let him know he needed to come back because there was a political explosion about everything. They couldn't get a hold of him in some hotspot country out there.
Yeah.
And people have made this whole, to me, people have made this whole pandemic into a very political apparatus. We had a gentleman, I interviewed his mother because he's in litigation right now, so he can't talk about it. He went into Canadian Tire in Canada without a mask, and five employees beat him up.
Oh my goodness.
And they actually had him in the George Floyd style chokehold where they were choking him out with a double chokehold.
Oh my gosh.
Yelling at them, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. And they're like, yes, you can. And then they saw that someone was filming and they let him go from the chokehold. And so I had someone on the podcast, you know, the mother, and people were saying, well, He was in there without a mask. He got what he deserved. And for me, the point of is to showcase that people should still be held accountable for their actions. Should he have been wearing a mask? Well, if the store says you need to wear a mask, you should be wearing a mask. They're a private organization and are allowed to make that rule. However, not wearing a mask does not mean that you should have five store employees punching you in the face and choking you out either.
It's a really difficult one, that, isn't it? Especially because, I don't want to get into it too much, but you know, there was a point in my pregnancy that I'm experiencing now that I couldn't wear a mask because I had a condition called hyperemesis where I could not stop being sick. I was constantly sick day in, day out, all through the night. And the mask would make the hot breath of the mask, as soon as I put the mask on, it would just make me, I was just throwing up. So I spent so much time in the hospital where everybody had to wear a mask. You know, the staff were wearing masks, they're wearing visors, but I just couldn't even wear one. So I just had to walk around the hospital with a bowl under my chin, feeling like an asshole because I couldn't wear a mask. But at the same time, you know, there will be people who are exempt. He could have been one of those people. Maybe there was an opportunity for him to say, well, you know, I have severe asthma, so, you know, I am exempt. And I don't know. It's difficult. But yeah, I don't know if that's the reaction that is warranted from somebody not wearing a mask, instead of just saying like, look, if you don't leave the store, I'm going to call the police, because our policy is that you should wear a mask and you're not wearing one. So you leave or we phone the police.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's like a vigilante taking the law into your own hands to the absolute extreme, isn't it?
But we've been seeing a lot of that, unfortunately.
Yeah. And
my podcast, and I have people on there, because I had someone on the one episode who thinks that the whole thing is just a big scam.
Oh, no.
He thinks the whole thing is all is just a big scam, in that that it's all being controlled by Bill Gates and blah blah blah. Interesting. However, now should we? The common thing these days is with people like that. The common thing that we've started doing is we refuse to give them a platform, or if they're on a platform, we take them off the platform. I think that's the most dangerous thing that you can do. I do not agree at all with Alex Jones, as hilarious as that man is, because he's just hilarious. I don't agree with any of the stuff he says. I don't think taking him off of his platforms is the smart idea, because all you do is you drive it underground. And what's the worst thing you can do with a paranoid person who thinks that people are out to get him?
Yeah, then you get into kind of gang stalking territory that I spoke about on a previous episode last week on the Conspiracy Vault podcast that I also do, where somebody believes they are a targeted individual. And then that just exacerbates things, doesn't it? But one thing you should definitely do is there's a subreddit, if you haven't heard of it already, called Podcast Guests. And I bet there's loads of people on that subreddit that if you reached out would be like, I've got loads of interesting stories I'd love to come and tell you.
No, definitely. I'll check it out. Podcast Guests.
Podcast Guests, yes, r/podcast guests. People post in their daily saying, you know, I'm looking for somebody that has stories around childbirth, or I'm looking for someone who works in the trade industry, like welding and things like that. So if you posted in there saying, I'm looking for people with interesting stories, I'm sure there would be a ton of people that would get back to you saying, yeah, I've got an interesting story. So definitely check that out. But unless you think there's anything that we've missed, Russell, regarding your family member and their situation, I think we've gone through everything today and we've probably reached the end of our show.
No, I just want to say, Casey, I really appreciate having me on the show today. I really do. It's an important topic. It's a topic that needs more attention, because there are vulnerable people out there who are being exploited by very nefarious individuals.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the more we can speak about these things and highlight them, you know, the more that I might walk to the store and somebody says, I'm from the last Reformation, would you like to hear what I have to say? And I could say, actually, do you know what, I've heard something about this group and I don't think it's for me. So raising awareness, like you said, is so important, but also making sure that we are caring for those loved ones and keeping those lines of communication open also is really important. So thank you so much, Russell, for coming here today, for giving us your story, and for being so delicate and careful with the way that you have spoken about the family member as well, to ensure their safety and make sure that you're not putting them in harm's way or potentially putting them at risk by divulging too much information about them or making them a target within their group. So I think you've done that very respectfully today. So thank you so much for your time, Russell. Good luck with your podcast, Coffee Breath Conversations. I hope you get some more listeners from overseas, and I really hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Thanks, Casey.
Thanks, Russell. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is the end of this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch, you could do so by emailing me at cultvaultpodcast@gmail.com or find me on Twitter and Instagram at cultvaultpod. I'm your speaker, Casey, and this has been The Cult Vault.